Today on Maine Calling, the everyday heroes in our communities. Sometimes you hear about them on the news. The stranger who saved someone's life by pulling them from a burning car, or maybe rescued a child from river rapids. But for every act of bravery, kindness, and grace that makes the headlines, there are hundreds that do not. Everyday heroes and Good Samaritans are all around us. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we celebrate them by sharing their stories. Do you know someone who has acted with selflessness and compassion, whether in an emergency or on a day-to-day basis? We want to hear from you. Mr. Rogers famously said, "Look for the helpers. Help us find them." Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to island and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Heroes don't have to be super strong or fight bad guys. They are everywhere in our communities, helping others in different ways. Today, we celebrate these everyday heroes and Good Samaritans and learn what they have in common. Joining me for the hour, Major Scott Gosselin with the Maine State Police Support Services. He was a first responder during the shootings in Lewiston. The Reverend Dr. Brittany Longsdorf, multi-faith chaplain at Bates College, and Sheriff William King of the York County Sheriff's Office. We invite you to join the conversation. Tell us about someone you know who you consider to be a hero, maybe somebody who did something in emergency or an everyday hero. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us today. So excited for today's program. Reverend Longsdorf, I'll start with you. We can all think of people in our lives we might call heroes. I'm thinking about my neighbor who takes the snowblower and snow blows out the driveways of all the folks in our neighborhood who are maybe a little, for one reason or another, not able to do so. And I'm wondering about how you think about this. What do you think are the traits that people who are everyday heroes have in common? Are these people just wired that way?
This is such a good question. And I think one of the things I love about the everyday hero subject, and I can't wait to hear other people's stories, is I think sometimes we don't have a common trait. I think it's an unexpected heroism at times. It's like a spark that goes off in a moment of pain or confusion that you don't even know you have, or the person next to you didn't know they have, and can just be unexpected and really surprising in the most beautiful ways. And I think it's really rooted in this belief in human dignity and human worth, and that we want to take care of each other. And it's a really important thing to think about and to name in spaces like this, in a time I think that can feel very divisive and polarizing. But there are these moments where you see someone in danger, where you see someone in harm's way, and you don't ask about their political or religious beliefs. You just go help. And there's this real love of one another and care of one another that's deeply interwoven, I think, in human nature, but sometimes can surprise us. I think sometimes that heroism can be really unexpected, from big to small things. The thing, I have a lot of examples that come to mind. I'm excited to hear other people's examples. I don't want to take up too much time, but one thing that happened last spring is I was driving on College in Russell, which is a fairly busy intersection here in Lewiston. And there was a group of ducklings trying to cross the street, and like three cars pulled over and like blocked the intersection and herded the ducklings. And people were honking and cheering them on, and people were putting their bodies at risk really in an intersection to help this form of innocence. And I don't think it was about, I think, you know, ducklings are adorable, but I don't think it's about the ducklings. I think it's this internal call to protect things that are innocent and protect things that have worth, and saw this in a much grander scale in the shooting in Lewiston last two Octobers ago as well, which I'm sure Bill and Scott can speak more to, but I think it's a beautiful internal thing.
Major Gosselin, in law enforcement, you see a lot of people who have to help people in danger. In fact, you were part of the first responder team during the shootings in Lewiston last year. People like you are people who have signed up to go in, and face danger. And I'm wondering, again, like Brittany said, there's no one reason, there's no one kind of person, but what is it? Why?
You know, I think what's clear in law enforcement is we're very lucky. You know, we get the opportunity to see people at their very best. And in law enforcement, we are in a position oftentimes where people need us to act outside of self-preservation. And but we also get the opportunity to see people outside of our profession who act outside of that self-preservation. I can recall a murder from 2011. It was in the town of New Gloucester. And there was a murder in the driveway where a father had murdered his wife and his best friend and left his children in the driveway and drove off, leaving his children there crying in the driveway. And there were neighbors from across the street that came running over without any regard for, you know, their own self-preservation, put themselves in harm's way to grab those children and brought them into their home to protect them. And I think of those moments where, as law enforcement, we get to be really significant witnesses to those crazy events and get the opportunity to see them, to see heroism on a day-to-day basis. It's really remarkable. And you know, looking back on Lewiston, I think of those Lewiston police officers, you know, at that first call that went driving to the, to the call at the bowling alley, and then the subsequent call at Schmengi's, and the brave officers from the Andrew Scoggin Sheriff's Office, the Auburn Police Department, the Maine Warden Service, the troopers that came off the turnpike, all of them that responded there in concert with Lewiston Police. It's just they put themselves outside of their own self-preservation, and you know, it's amazing that we get to witness that so often in law enforcement.
Well, Sheriff King, I know that you've been thinking about this a lot and kind of compiling a list. You see a lot of really good examples of heroes in action. So I'm going to have you start by telling us about a case in Lebanon involving a burning car.
Well, first of all, Jennifer, thank you very much for having this topic and for having me on. Yeah, I think Major Gosselin said it very, very well, is that police have that opportunity to do that. And I think that when we talk about everyday heroes, it's those people that want to just go outside their own bubble, that take the time, that don't keep driving. And that happened in Lebanon a few months ago when there was a crash and the vehicle went off the road, hit a tree and started going, it ignited on fire. And we had this very brave man, Stanley Greenier, that stopped, and he had his family with him. And he went up to the vehicle. He saw that the guy was somewhat entrapped, was able to get him out and pull him away from the burning vehicle, because the guy would have perished in that fire. And he pulled him far enough away. Other people started gathering and went in there. And he didn't want his young child to see that type of devastation. So he just went back in the vehicle and he left. We didn't know who he was for a while. I put it on Facebook, and sure enough, I mean, people came forward and said, oh, that was my husband. I heard about this thing. And he did come in and we chatted and, you know, we put it on Facebook and that type of thing. But yeah, that's that to me is an everyday hero. And, you know, and again, and he was faced with that opportunity to help somebody and to save a life. You know, when we think about that, though, I mean, law enforcement, there's not a lot of law enforcement officers in Maine, and we need citizen involvement. And I'm really very thankful for the citizens that do help us. And if I could just give one more example, I mean, we were dealing with a woman with dementia, and the call came in as a disturbance because she was out on the roadway and she was just not making any sense. And the deputies arrived there and they didn't know who she was. And she was an elderly woman. And they didn't want to go hands-on with her and take her to the hospital. So they were trying to reason with her, and that wasn't very well. She was very paranoid. And a neighbor came out, Jennifer Stonehouse, came out and said, oh, and was able to calm her down. The woman didn't recognize her, but she was able to use a lot of skills and chat with her and was able to get her to voluntarily go into the police car to be taken to the hospital to be seen where we could contact her, her family. So, yeah, I mean, I'm honored, actually, to be a law enforcement officer in Maine because of the citizen involvement that we have. I mean, in a prior career, I worked in New York City and Phoenix, Arizona, and some of those places, and people would just drive by. And I think that Maine, we have a lot of involved and engaged community members. So I'm very honored to be a law enforcement officer in Maine.
Major Gosselin.
Yes.
Oh, I saw you. I thought you raised your hand. I thought you wanted to jump
in. Oh, sorry. No.
Okay. Hey, Brittany, I wanted to talk to you. You are a chaplain. And mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk to you about this term Good Samaritan that we use colloquially. And many people learned about the Good Samaritan in Sunday school, but many people did not. So why don't you tell us about the origins of the term and what you think it means today to be a Good Samaritan?
Sure. So the story of the Good Samaritan is in the book of Luke in Christian scripture, and it's essentially a story about a man who gets beaten and robbed and left on the side of the road. And more privileged and well-positioned people see him but walk by, including a priest in the story. But in the end, a Samaritan stops and helps the man in the road. And it's really this beautiful story of compassion, unexpected compassion, and reaching towards a stranger, someone unknown, someone unlike you, with a heart of generosity. And the Good Samaritan phrase and story is rooted in Christian tradition, but there are many sacred texts from different world religions that touch on this. There's a beautiful Sufi poem that calls people to be a lifeboat, to be a ladder. There's these deep Hindu philosophies of selfless service. There's a lot of common pagan stories of heroes who cross social boundaries to protect the vulnerable, all these really sacred stories about protecting the vulnerable. And so I think when we use the phrase Good Samaritan, it's really about this idea of protecting someone you may not know, someone who is also distinctly different from you, but that your heart, your instincts tell you this is a moment for care and to cross those boundaries, the social boundaries, to cross those divides and help in whatever way you can, whatever capacity you have.
I'm interested in you using the word instincts. And Major Gosselin, I'm going to turn to you about this because I understand that often people don't know what they have in them until they face it. They don't know if they are going to be able to go into the proverbial burning building or even recognize that something is an emergency. You know, that how many people drive by not even realizing what they just drove by. And I'm wondering if there's a way we can train this in ourselves, train, and if it's something that police officers do when they train to train us to be more observant and also to have the instinct to help.
Yeah, you know, I think back to our training at the police academy, and I think about how we vet our candidates. You know, those candidates, those recruits that are at the academy now are going through various scenarios where they're tested. And how are you going to react? What are you going to do? And so they're tested in a way where the instructors are constantly trying to evaluate whether or not, you know, they're going to react in a way we want them to react, whether they're going to put themselves outside of self-preservation and act in the interest of others. And we look for those candidates, and those candidates at the academy that do so quicker rise to the top of their class, of course. And some of them who don't may not even make it to the end of training because we look to see if people have that instinct to act outside of self-preservation. And if they don't, they may not make it. And I'm not sure that you can train people to do that. I think that the more they're exposed to scenarios, they learn to function differently, and perhaps they can be trained. But I think a lot of it falls back to instinct and how people were raised. But I think it's a great question. You know, is it instinct or can it be trained? I think it goes back to that age-old question.
Joining us now is Manny Carinos, who is owner of Atlantic Mooring Services and a resident of Falmouth. And we asked Manny to call in because he has been called a hero and he was awarded Citizen of the Year in Falmouth. Manny, thanks so much for calling in and tell us what happened, why you had to rescue someone who was drowning.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show. We just passed the 1 year anniversary. It was November 16th last year, and I was out on my boat, just a kind of a regular day off the East End Beach in Portland where they do the fireworks, a promenade. And we were taking mooring balls off, part of my program for my customers, and we heard a lot of sirens in the parking lot. My helper and I kind of looked at each other and said, geez, there seems like there's a excessive amount of, respond traffic up there. And off in the distance, probably 300 yards, I saw something in the water. And I said to Mike, my helper, do you think that's a car? And he said, I don't know, it could be. And I said, well, we better go over and see if it is, because it was far enough away from the shoreline. We, knew it was, didn't look right. So while we were idling over there, he said, I think there's some people in the water swimming towards it. And when we as we were approaching it, the car sunk below the surface and there were three guys in the water. I think there were two Portland firefighters and one Portland police officer, and they'd swam out and they were talking to each other, looking in the water. And they said, I can see it right there. You've got it by the mirror. And they had like a grappling hook. And I asked them, was that a car? And they said, yeah. And I said, was someone in it? And they said, yeah, one person. And, we couldn't get them out and we've got divers coming. So I just said, well, I'm a diver. I've been diving for about 30 years. And I said, I've got my gear here on the boat. And I instructed my helper, go down forward and get the dive gear. It was down in the bow of the boat. And they had like a marker buoy on top of the water. And I dropped my anchor and kind of gauged where the boat would land. And the guys were, still swimming around in the water. And I got into my gear. Normally, I kind of dread getting into my dive gear, but I got in it like lickety split. I kept making sure my helper got my fins, my mask, and all of that stuff. And I followed the line down to the bottom, and there was the car parked on the bottom in approximately 15 feet of water. And I remember the firefighter had said to me, the window's open, but I can't get the person out. So I just swam, up to the driver's side door, and there was a lifeless body sitting there. And I reached in and grabbed the person and pulled them through the window. And I went to like push up to the surface. And I remember their feet, they had their sneakers on, and they got kind of stuck between the door and the steering wheel. So it ended up being a female occupant, and I shook her feet and was able to clear that, getting her free and pushed her up to the surface. And then the responders that were there, Portland Fire, and then they brought her to the shoreline and they were doing CPR on her. And as it turns out, one of my mooring customers, Bill Miller, was her paramedic, and they got her pulse back when she was in the ambulance, I guess, on the way to the hospital. She'd been underwater. The whole thing, I believe, was captured on videotape by News Center Maine, and they told me she was underwater for about 7 minutes, and there was no pulse or heartbeat when they, when she came out of the water. But miraculously, they brought her back to life. And then I went back down to make sure there weren't like any children or, other people in the car, and got the license plate number for the police to, start their, what I guess was an investigation.
Well, Manny, thank goodness you were there and you had the presence of mind and the skill to save that woman's life. And I'm wondering, when you were underwater and you were noticing her sneakers and noticing her feet and trying to troubleshoot, did you feel as though time stood still? Did it slow down? And did you feel panicky or did you feel calm? What was it like under there?
Well, I mean, it definitely was a I would say I was just like in an adrenaline rush with the whole thing, you know, getting into my gear as fast as possible, you know, and when you're in that actual event, you know, you kind of, there are certain things that you'll remember, right? Like they're just, you don't remember like every footstep you take, so to speak. But I mean, I don't know. There were times where like I can think back and, you know, I remember swimming up to the car and seeing the, you know, the front fender and then seeing it said 5.0 Ford Mustang. And then I knew I needed to, you know, slide back a little bit more to find the door. But, you know, it did, time didn't stand still, but I have, you know, flashbacks of, you know, each kind of step along the way, following the line down, finding the grapple, the front of the car, the you know, the girl sitting in the car. She had a black sweatshirt and gray sweatpants on. I mean, I'll never forget that.
Well, Manny, thank you so much for being willing to call in. Congratulations on being FALMIS 2023 Citizen of the Year.
Can I jump in?
Sheriff King, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to commend you for being prepared. I mean, you had all that gear with you, and you had the, I think Jennifer said, you had the presence of mind. I mean, I think it's amazing that the woman was only in the water for 7 minutes because it took you time to get there, to assess the situation. Oh, I have the equipment, get the equipment on, have the presence, the leadership really to have your helper get the fins. I mean, I really commend you. That was a great story. That's really amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it, you know,
we do have deputy openings if you're interested.
Did you hear that, Manny? Deputy openings in York County Sheriff's Department. Oh my goodness. I hate to say this, but we have to go to a break. Manny Carinos, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about everyday heroes, Good Samaritans, and we want to hear stories from you. Who do you want to pay tribute to? Our guest today, Brittany Longsdorf, a chaplain at Bates College, or the chaplain at Bates College, Bill King, who's York County Sheriff, and Scott Goslin with the Maine State Police. You can join the conversation with a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Dan Goodman. He is Public Affairs Officer for AAA of Northern New England. Thanks so much for calling in, Dan.
Thank you very much for having me.
I know you're calling in to talk about somebody many people in Maine know, Pat Moody. He was a driving safety expert with AAA, often interviewed on the news, and has been on Maine Calling, but also a beloved community member in Windham. He sadly passed away from cancer recently. His funeral is today. Tell us about Pat Moody and why you say he is and was an everyday hero.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. And, you know, Pat had a remarkable career here at AAA that lasted 27 years, starting in dispatch, answering members' calls, to, as you mentioned, ending as the director of public affairs. He was such a passionate advocate for safety. He was a dedicated leader and just a huge cherished friend to everyone who knew him. His leadership here at AAA, it was instrumental, and he advocated for critical laws that made our roads right here in Maine safer. To name a few, the hands-free driving law, our seatbelt law, and the slow down move over law that protects all those emergency responders who are working on the side of the road to help make our lives safer. And then he just had like so much enthusiasm for AAA, all its members, the employees, and traffic safety. I mean, his influence reached far and wide, spanning partnerships with colleagues, state agencies like Maine State Police, and Sheriff King knew him well as well, lawmakers and news organizations like you just mentioned, and tons of other stakeholders. He was a familiar face, as you mentioned, on local TV and radio, doing countless interviews, promoting safer roads, such stuff as winter driving safety, teen driver safety, holiday travel forecasts, and distracted driving. You know, and beyond all the great things he did at AAA, he was so committed to his community. His love for his hometown of Windham, Maine, which he was born and raised, it was evident in everything he did. If you ever spent any time with him professionally, he always talked about Windham. And a testament to his lasting impact, the town recently honored him by naming its brand new outdoor basketball courts after him in a surprise ceremony. And there was probably 1,000 people there. I mean, it was truly amazing. And for me, Pat has been my boss for 10 years, but he was so much more. I mean, I can't tell you, he was made me a better person, a better community member, definitely a better employee, a better dad, a better husband. And he was, to the end, the most supportive boss. Just 2 days before his passing, he didn't tell me, but he saw his presentation I gave, which I didn't think I gave that well. And he called me right after and told me how great of a job I did. It was the most typical Pat thing. He was selfless and always supportive. And over the last week, a lot has been written about Pat since his passing. But one quote has stuck with me over the last week, which was, the first time you meet Pat, he makes you feel like you're his best friend. And it was so true. I miss him so much. This is really hard. AAA misses him. And I know there's so many people around this state, Wyndham, and the country that miss him. I mean, he truly made the world a safer and a better place. That's what I want to say about Pat.
Yeah, a beautiful tribute. I know today's a very difficult day, and I so appreciate you taking the time to call in today. Dan Goodman with AAA of Northern New England talking about Pat Moody. Thank you for calling in. Let's see, we have so many. Oh, go ahead, Sheriff King.
Yeah, no, I know. I thank you very much, John. That, he's absolutely right. I mean, as a user of AAA, I mean, Pat was just awesome, and his enthusiasm. I mean, for a non-law enforcement person, he really, really had a big influence on traffic safety in Maine. I would chat with him, and he would send. I've worked with him, Mr. Goodman, and Tom Barron quite a bit on traffic safety, and it's amazing, even though it's not a government entity, AAA is someone that you can call for assistance, and they're always there. They're always there to help you. So yeah, I mean, I just echo everything that Goodman said about Pat. He's going to be sorely missed by everyone, and especially the law enforcement community, I believe.
I'm going to go here to an email from Adam. My first year of college, I had a situation where a senior football player was getting physical with his girlfriend in the room next door. I wanted to go help, but didn't. 30 years on, I still regret it. So I vowed to intercede whenever faced with a difficult situation. I think the urge is to help, but in the moment, it's often tough to follow through. I place scenarios in my own head on what I will do next time. I won't let down a person in need ever again. And Adam, that's such an honest and relatable email. And I want to turn to you, Major Goslin, because I know that you and others, other law enforcement officers, are often responding to these really personal and difficult situations that may involve domestic violence or suspected child abuse. And there were neighbors, there were people around. And what would you say to Adam? And what would you say to all of us?
Yeah, I think Adam's feelings are perfectly normal, and even as law enforcement officers, you may never know how you're going to respond in a really critical situation where maybe if there's gunfire, maybe if there's somebody in a burning building, and we like to think that we are all going to respond as we should, as we're trained. And I think it's very, very common actually for law enforcement officers to have a lot of these dreams about, how they're going to react when the time is right. And I think we all think, we like to think that we're going to react in the right way. And I think a mental drill that a lot of law enforcement officers use is to often put ourselves mentally in these situations and try and think through these situations and how we would respond. I know it's very, very common for people to feel the same way the caller did, regret, how they reacted, and maybe next time it would be very, very different. And there's nothing to say that the next time it happens, that because this happened to you already, that you'll be ready for it the next time. So I think it's very common to feel the same way that the caller was feeling.
Let's go to Melissa calling from Portland. Hi, Melissa. Go ahead.
Hi there. Well, I can't reiterate enough what the man just said about you never know how you're going to react when you're in a crazy, dangerous situation. I'm a pretty shy, reclusive, timid person. And 20 years ago up in Harrison, I was driving along in a whiteout snowstorm, and I saw that the headlights in front of me veered off the other way on the road and basically went over the bridge and into the water. And nobody would have seen that but me. There was nobody coming. You know, it was completely a whiteout. And long story short, there was no one around to call 911. I didn't have a cell phone. And so I ran down the embankment, you know, and saw this woman who was very much in shock, wasn't even sure she'd been in an accident. And I helped her out of her car, which was like, you know, nose end into the water. And she got out of the car and we climbed up the hill together. And I got to the top of the hill and started trying to flag down cars, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't remember who came along, but I know that I kind of ended up passing her off because I had to pick up a really small child somewhere that was closing. But my point was, you just don't know who you are when, you know, something like that comes along.
Melissa, I so appreciate your story. And I'm guessing that in your life, there's sort of the before that happened and after that happened. The way you think
well,
about
kind
yourself.
It's weird. This has happened to me like 3 times in my life.
Oh, my.
Something like this. Well, the other times you're catching elderly people from the top of the escalator falling down and running and catching them. This is so not like me.
So you are a guardian angel walking among us. Thank you for being you, Melissa. I appreciate it. I'm going to go to an email from Patty who writes, the significant thing about the Good Samaritan in the Bible story is that the Samaritans and the Jews hated each other. So building on what you were saying earlier, Brittany.
Yeah, that it's really crossing this divide of difference. And there was, you know, known animosity between those two perspectives, and the idea that the Samaritan would be the one to still help versus the priest and the other passerbys on the road, I think is one of those beautiful parts where it reminds us how central it is to being human, to taking care of each other, despite what we might know about each other or assume about each other. And just in the story Melissa just told, that she didn't know anything about this woman who just took, you know, went off the road into the river across the bridge, didn't ask any of those questions. It's just this sort of extreme form of compassion and care. I think we have this internal calling towards.
We have an email here from Cheryl. Everyone should take CPR first aid training. The certificate is good for 2 years, so you renew every 2 years and be a helper instead of helpless. Sheriff King, I'm going to guess you agree.
I absolutely agree. I also want to urge everyone to carry Narcan. They could save a life if they have Narcan available.
Wow, and a really, really good tip. Where can someone get a hold of Narcan?
Well, actually, they could contact any law enforcement agency. That's part of our mission is to really push Narcan out. They could call, if they call the sheriff's office, I'll make sure they get them some if they're, you know, in York County or around that area.
Well, we are talking about everyday heroes on Maine Calling. We'd love to hear the story of your experience or someone you know. You can send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we are talking about everyday heroes, not only people who respond when there's an emergency, but also people who do those little things every day. Our guests today, York County Sheriff Bill King, State Police Major Scott Goslin, and Bates College Chaplain Reverend Brittany Longsdorf. You can share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Though I fear our lines may be full, so many calls coming in, so many people wanting to talk about heroes in their lives. I'm going to read an email here from Jane. My mother was a registered nurse. Compassion and integrity were her guides. In the 1970s, two girls were walking on our street and got hit by a car. One landed on our lawn, and without hesitation, my mother ran out and tried to save her life. My mother did this without hesitation. After working the night shift at the hospital and raising five young children essentially on her own. Another time, a garbage man was hit by a school bus right in front of our house and lost his leg. My mother shoved me and my brother inside and ran out without hesitation with a blanket to try to save the man's life and give him great comfort. My mother was the greatest warrior and hero I've ever known. And then from Pembroke, Maine, we have an email. I have served as a volunteer firefighter in rural Washington County for 34 years. I've never heard a volunteer firefighter refer to him or herself as a hero, although we are usually the first to be called for any manner of emergency, especially now that police coverage in Washington County is so very thin, through no fault of the brave officers who serve our area with their limited budgets and personnel. Mm-hmm. So thank you for those emails. Sheriff King, I know you have more stories to share. Why don't you tell us one?
Well, I just think of, I mean, the everyday hero. You're absolutely right. I had a conversation with an 84-year-old gentleman named John Francis, and I thanked him for his service. It was Veterans Day. He was a veteran of the Army. And when I asked him what he does for excitement during our conversation, he's, I'm a school bus driver. He was exuberant how happy he was. I says, really? And during my conversation, he actually drives a school bus for special needs students. In RSU 21, he's been doing it now for almost a decade. And he said, when I retired, I came back to Maine. I was getting bored, and that's what I want to do. And he looks so forward. He knows all of his students. I said, gee, that it's really something, I think, to be a school bus driver, and I think it's even a greater responsibility to have special needs students that you're in charge of. And he just tells me that he wants to maintain that consistency for those children. And I just found that it was just a remarkable conversation that I had with him. And when I walked away, I really felt I was humbled to be, you know, to be talking with him. And that's Maine. To me, you know, that is Maine. That's somebody that gets out of his comfort level and does something that's not making a lot of money, but really, really making a difference, I think, in this community.
Brittany, an everyday hero.
Yeah, I love that you said that, Sheriff King, and also just that the topic is not just hero, but everyday hero. We get this range of grand, brave acts, but also those smaller, quieter acts of heroism. I think about the family and friend who stays up all night with you on the phone when you're having a hard moment. And I think we don't always honor how significant those acts are, how they can literally help keep someone alive, keep someone healthy, help people feel less alone. Driving a school bus and the nurses and teachers in our midst, there are so many great acts of heroism that may seem mundane, but are actually quite special and quite sacred.
And Major Goslin, I know that you want to take us back to Lewiston a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, as you all know, it was such a traumatic event for the community. The community is really still trying to recover from it. For those people that lost loved ones, they really have a hard time moving on, even in day-to-day life. And it's very, very difficult. And I can speak certainly to the heroism of a couple individuals at the bowling alley and as you know, the bowling alley was the first place targeted. And as the shooter came in, two individuals ran and attacked the individual. Clearly, they saw he had shot one person before, and they attacked him to try and get him to drop the weapon, try and distract him, try and give their friends some time to seek cover or to leave. And both of them lost their lives, you know, putting themselves in harm's way, lost their lives, and but gave their family and their friends an opportunity to hide and to leave, and gave everybody in that bowling alley some extra time. And it is an extreme act of heroism that you know, is very, that's uncommon to see that kind of heroism. But boy, you know, we're going to name an award for them later this year where we can recognize citizens who put themselves in harm's way to help or protect others, which is fitting in this situation for sure.
Thank you for sharing that. It's so powerful. Calling us now, Leslie Clark, Executive Director of the Portland Recovery Community Center. Thanks for calling in, Leslie. And who would you like to talk about as an everyday hero?
Thank you, Jennifer. It's so good to be here again. And I love this topic. I presented to our staff meeting that this was going to be the topic, and we went around naming heroes. And I have to tell you, we ended up with a couple of pages. So, you know, that in itself is beautiful, just to think of how many people in the fabric of our communities are out there helping others quietly and making a really big difference. So yes, recovery community centers are centers. There's now 20 in Maine. Portland is the largest, but they're all over the state. And we often serve as either the first place someone comes looking for recovery from addiction, or that bridge from treatment or jail to kind of the rest of their lives. And I would start with the police. You know, there are just so many of us in recovery, and I'm a person in recovery for many years, that the police were part of our stories. And as much trouble as we can cause an act of addiction and not necessarily during that time appreciate the police, it is just amazing to witness the kindness and the dignity and the respect of most of the police and first responders. There are so many people of stories of people in recovery going back later to thank the police and apologize for their behavior. But there are just hundreds more who never get that opportunity to tell the police what a difference they made. And, you know, that it may be that the police gave them Narcan 5 times or 6 times or 7 times. And today they're doing well and they're helping the next person. There was a young woman that told me about, I think it was Sacco, that she was going to go down and you know, tell the police what that she was sorry, that the resources she had taken up, the behavior, the physical attacks when she was under the influence, and where she is today, and to thank them for helping her family and helping her. And, you know, of course, that was really scary to do, but she got there, and the police hugged her and said, you know, we are just so happy to see you and know you're doing well.
Leslie, so I think, thank you so much. Yeah, for calling in and sharing that perspective. And Major Goslin, I'm guessing that's just so great to hear, because it is often difficult to be working with someone who is under the influence and agitated and angry.
It certainly is. And you never hear it in the moment, right? You never hear it in those moments when, you know, it may be happening or you may be taking your action. But when you do hear it, it's in the grocery store and somebody comes up to you and it's a tap on the shoulder. And, you know, it's one of these situations where, do you remember me? And you have this interaction where, geez, I don't really remember you. And then you hear that story where you might've had this impact on their lives. And I know that our folks hear that quite often, especially with Narcan as an alternative for us to, you know, provide that medication in somebody's worst moment. It's not uncommon. It's great to hear, though.
Leslie Clark with Portland Recovery Community Center. Thanks so much for calling in. We will go to Lucia, who's calling from Union. Hi, Lucia. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for your program. I was a nurse at Togus on the 4 to midnight shift for a few years, and driving home after midnight in January, slushy roads and stuff, I wound up hitting a heavy slush pocket, spun around, and wound up tail end first in the ditch with the front end of the car up. And I wasn't hurt, and the car wasn't injured, but I certainly couldn't move, get out of there. And several people stopped, and, you know, and I said I had already called the state police and stuff, and they just went off. This one man stopped and he, after making sure I was fine, said he would wait up on the road until the state police got there to make sure that I was okay. And I never knew his name, and I still to this day think of him about how kind and generous he was. And this was like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, Lucia, oh my gosh. Well, hopefully he's listening right now and he says, oh, I remember that. And so you've just thanked him live on the air. Thank you so much for calling in. We're going to move on and go to Mary, who's calling from Waldoboro. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yes, just two quick stories of times I intervened in suicide attempts. One was when my daughters, who are now both in their 50s, were in elementary school in Centerville, Virginia, and I volunteered in their classrooms. And there came a time when there was suddenly an event outside the school in a copse of trees where a young boy, a teenager, was threatening suicide with a knife. The principal couldn't get through to him. His parents couldn't get through to him. I went and talked. I went outside and stood on the side of the grass and talked to him like a mother to their child. Makes me cry now to think about it. But anyway, I finally talked him down. He came out and gave me the knife, and then, you know, authorities took over. But I went to visit him in the hospital eventually. And so anyway, that had a happy ending. And then another time I was living in New York, and I was about to cross the Tappan Zee Bridge over the Hudson River. And there was a big commotion ahead, and there was a person standing on the side ready to jump. And cars just kept going by, going around him. And I stopped and got out and went over as carefully as I could and talked that person down. And again, you know, I just stood there and held their hand until some authorities came along to take over. So those were just two times that, you know, you just can't pass by, when I couldn't, at least, when you see something like that about to happen. And I'd like to say, if I could, just real quickly, even if there are times when there aren't tragedies about to happen, but just when you see someone in need here in Maine, since my husband and I have moved to Maine 10 years ago, I saw a young girl walking along the road on a bitter, bitter, bitter cold, windy winter day with no coat. And I said, you know, I have so many coats at home. Let me run back. I went back home, got her a coat, came up and stopped and said, can you use a coat? And she, tears down her face, she put on this coat, and away she went, and away I went. She didn't want to ride. She just took the coat. So,
Mary, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing. And there's a lot of power, Brittany, and just holding somebody's hand, isn't there?
Yeah, that presence is a real act of heroism sometimes, just waiting up on the side of the road.
We'll go to Tom calling from South Portland. Hi, Tom, go ahead.
Hello. I only have a brief comment that, to me, heroism, like beauty, is almost entirely in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. Anyone who considers themselves beautiful or themselves heroism, a hero, really is a very small portion of the meaning of the word. It's the other people around that view a hero and make that hero.
Yeah, Tom, and you find that Sheriff King, right? You have to go search out heroes sometimes, and if you want to give them just a little accolade, it takes some digging to figure out who they are.
Absolutely, yep.
So,
well,
Tom,
I think that Mary.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think Mary was very, very brave for stopping on the Tappan Zee Bridge. I'll give her credit for that. I've been on that bridge.
Yeah. And actually, we're almost out of time, Tom. Thank you for calling. But Major Goslin, maybe in this last minute, some advice about if you're going to help, helping safely?
Yeah, geez, you know, absolutely. Helping safely, it, obviously, you're putting yourselves in harm's way regardless, but doing so to the best of your ability to try and be safe is obviously the best scenario there. But really, being a hero is really showing the best of our humanity, right? It's voluntarily putting yourself in a situation where it may not be safe, but you're going to act outside of that, and you're going to behave in a way that is uncommon. You know, it's really amazing to hear these stories. This has been a great show. Thank you.
Yeah, and one thing I'm thinking, and Brittany, just a few seconds, is that we think of them as uncommon, but maybe more common than we realize.
Just hearing you can get these lists and pages and pages from a staff meeting, I think we should all be in this practice of thinking who our everyday heroes are, naming them more openly.
Thank you all so much for being here. Major Scott Goslin with the Maine State Police Support Services, the Reverend Dr. Brittany Longsdorf, the multi-faith chaplain at Bates College, and Sheriff William King with the York County Sheriff's Office. Today's sound engineer was Jessica Miller. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can go to our Maine Calling website and sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out every Friday, and we tell you what's coming up the next week. That's at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.